Hello and welcome to the Gandhara, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Pakistan and Afghanistan. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. After two decades in exile, the prominent Afghan warlord, leader of Hizb Islami, Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, has finally returned to Afghanistan. His return followed intense negotiations with the authorities. Upon his arrival, he called the Taliban to give up their guns and told authorities that he don't have eyes on power and informed people that he come with a message of peace. In return, he received warm welcome from the authorities. His name was also removed from United Nations wanted list. While generally welcomed by people, but bulk of civic society activists also protested demanding his persecution for the past alleged crimes. Now, there are so many questions about his return, about his real intentions, his timing of it. And I guess the mother of all questions is, what does his return mean to Afghanistan? Today, we hope to find answer to at least some of these questions. In doing so, I'm joined by Michael Kugelman, Senior South Asia Fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center. We are also joined by Andrew Wilder,
Vice President of Asia Programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace.
Rahimullah Samander is joining us from Afghanistan. He's the head of Afghanistan's Independent Journalists Union. Abu Bakr Siddiq, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website, which looks into Pakistan in Afghanistan, is joining us from Prague. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. With this, let's clean the table first. In your opinion, Samander, why did Hikmatyar return to Afghanistan?
There are different reasons for this. When I talked to senior Hizb Islami leadership in Kabul last week, and I raised the first question that why Hikmatyar Sahib didn't come in the beginning, for example, 2002, 2003, or 2004, up to five.
Right.
They had long list of reasons for this, and they were saying that that time the Kabul administration was mostly people from Northern Alliance. They were controlling the power. The U.S. government was supporting them. So they were saying that if Hikmatyar was in Kabul that time, and some of these leaders from Hizb Islami thought that Hikmatyar was maybe arrested, he was maybe sent to Guantanamo. So that time, this was very hard for Hikmatyar and for Hizb Islami to explain issues, to defend himself, and to take active part in the power that time.
Okay. Yeah, basically you are talking about the timing of his return. We will come back to that subject. But before that, maybe, Michael, I can go to you with this question. Upon his arrival, he already gave few speeches. Was there anything striking in selection of his words indicating his future actions, plans?
Well, I think it's just striking how he is trying to reinvent himself as someone who had, you know, been a brutal warlord like so many others in Afghanistan who have gone into politics, and is now trying to project himself as a man of peace, or a man that wants to try to help the country bring peace out there. So I think that's a very significant factor that we're seeing this type of dramatic shift on his part. But again, I mean, this is not unusual. There are many Hikmatyar types in Afghanistan, those that had done terrible things on the battlefield and then decided to join politics and you know, never really faced accountability for what had happened on the battlefield, so to speak. But you know, I think that, you know, the issue of why is he doing this and why now, I think that he perhaps increasingly saw the writing on the wall, so to speak, that Hizb Islami is simply not a factor on the battlefield as it had been in previous years, and many members of the organization have essentially thrown their support to the government in Afghanistan. And I think that he really didn't want to lose his relevance and his influence, so he figured it was time for him to get involved in a very big way.
Interesting. Andrew, what was your reading of his initial comments after his return?
Well, perhaps I can go back to your first question first, because I think the interesting question is not so much why Hikmatyar wanted to come back now. It's maybe more why the government wanted him back now. Because if you're Hikmatyar, you're largely lost relevance. You're no longer a credible militant force. Politically, he was increasingly irrelevant and living in exile. Why not come back and become immediately relevant again? not to mention get some nice plots of land in the process and get, you know, your followers celebrating your return, and now becoming a fairly important political force overnight back in Afghanistan from being largely irrelevant. So I think why he came back, I understand. I guess I have a few more questions maybe we'd come to later in the discussion on the, you know, why the government would want him back.
Yeah,
certainly I have mixed feelings about it as someone who, when I was working for the International Rescue Committee in Peshawar in the late 80s or early 90s and had close colleagues of mine killed by Hikmat Yar's goons in those days, you know, really, you know, mixed feelings about, you know, his being allowed to return at this time. On the other hand, you know, as someone who works at a peace institute, you generally don't need to make peace with your friends. You need to make it with your enemies. And so I think there is some symbolic value to the, you know, return of Gulbuddin. And in particular, in his speeches, the extent to which he highlighted the importance of peace and bringing the Taliban to the table. But in my view, his relevance, I mean, as someone who is largely defeated, I don't necessarily think the Taliban are going to look to him as an example of how they want to enter a peace process necessarily, because they don't feel like they've been defeated. But I think in the longer term, I see his impact probably being much greater on domestic politics in Afghanistan, including in electoral politics, than you know, in the actual peace process itself.
Abu Bakr, I hear both Andrew and Michael saying that he's not really relevant in today's Afghanistan. So does it matter at all that he returned?
I think it does. He is, by many estimates, heading one of the biggest, certainly, political parties in Afghanistan. Now, it's another question that his party may not be as organized as people would like it to be, but certainly Hizb-e-Islami is one of the biggest parties. It has been part of the Hizb-e-Islami has been part of this new political system or various governments since 2001. The big question is now for Hikmat Yar is, and we have seen some indications of this, that is he capable of first uniting or reuniting Hizb-e-Islami behind him? And of course, I think we also need to wait and see as to what is his attitude towards his former rivals, particularly all factions or remnants of Jamiat-e-Islami party, which is one of the biggest, he has obviously in his first speeches, he has had very critical remarks about what Jamiat is doing. He has said very critical things about some of the Hazaras factions who he said he didn't name them, but he clearly indicated that, I mean, their involvement in sending Afghan fighters to Syria on Iran's behalf is something that's not acceptable. He has made references to the past, and I think that a lot of Hizb-e-Islami cadres harbor very strong grievances about, I mean, what happened in the 1990s when, according to them, they were prevented from assuming power.
Mm. Obviously, we have to move
can
on.
Can I just interject for 1 minute?
Yes, please. Go on.
Which is that, again, I certainly was not saying he's not relevant. I was saying he had lost relevance sitting in exile in Pakistan. His relevance now coming back, as I absolutely agree with Abu Bakr, is going to be on, I think, some of the domestic political situation. And, you know, the question mark is, can he unite? And I tend to think myself that he will be relatively successful in bringing some of the other factions of Hizb-e-Islami around him. And in that sense, I think Hizb-e-Islami will become one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful, single political party in Afghanistan in the years to come.
Do you want to jump in, Michael? Otherwise, I will move on to the other topic.
No, and I actually agree with what Andrew said. I also was not suggesting that he's irrelevant, but I think he was worrying that he was essentially missing the train, that given the shifts in the country and given how so many members of his party were essentially throwing their support to the government, you know, that made him feel that he had an opportunity to try to reinvent himself and do some really, really big things. And I agree that he has a lot of potential to try to bring more unity to what is obviously such a country that's so divided on a very political level and other levels as well. It's true that he faces a lot of rivals in the government. I mean, certainly the Jamaat folks, that's going to be a big challenge. But, you know, there are things that he can look to. He does retain. He seems to have contacts everywhere. I mean, he has links to Taliban leaders. And I think one thing that's important is there's been some talk about how many of his supporters give him a lot of, ascribe this type of religious legitimacy to him, describing him as an emir of multiple jihads. And I think the hope there among his supporters is that he can try to deflate some of the legitimacy of the Taliban insurgency by pointing to him as truly the one that has the best jihadi credentials, so to speak. And yeah. Of course, the idea there is that could perhaps undercut the momentum of the insurgency and make the Taliban think twice about refusing to come to the peace table. I think that may be going a bit too far, but bottom line is I do think there is some potential for him to do some pretty good things in the political context, though it will certainly not be easy.
Okay. Then there is two counterpoint to that. First is, in his first speech in Jalalabad, I think he said that he come without any condition. And also he has no political ambitions in Afghanistan, so why he plays low politics if he is still relevant there? The second thing is, what is the agenda that he can bring back all those loyalists? In Afghanistan, we know it, that people do not remain loyal forever. Who wants to take the question? Maybe Andrew?
Well, you know, having seen Hikmatyar operate over the last four decades, it's hard to imagine that he suddenly lost interest in politics and being a politically relevant figure. If that were the case, I think he would have just quietly retired in Pakistan. Why come back to Afghanistan? So I absolutely think he has political ambitions in coming back, and I think we're going to see that unfold. Unfortunately, I think it will play out along ethnic lines to a considerable extent, because as Abu Bakr mentioned, I mean, he has, more so than many Afghan leaders, publicly spoken out against Hazaras. And of course, he has his longstanding enmity with Jamiat. And so I think I could see him emerging. You know, we have parliamentary elections that are supposed to happen next year. I mean, it's another question whether they will. And then, of course, presidential elections. And I think in that context, it's very hard to imagine Hizbi Islami not trying to become more united and contesting both the parliamentary and presidential elections. And so I do see them becoming quite politically active, and that Gulbuddin is going to become politically active. I hope he will also try to play a constructive role in the peace process. And I think his initial speech and comments were, I think, useful in that regard. But as I mentioned earlier, ultimately, I think his impact will be more on the political side than it's going to be in terms of serving as an example or a model for the Taliban to come in from the cold and follow Gulbuddin's good example.
If I may add, sure. I just quickly want to add that I think in his speech at the Afghan Presidential Palace in Arg, he made very specific examples to the Afghan constitution, the kind of political system that Afghanistan has, in his opinion, should have. I think he clearly sees himself as a leader of an Islamist movement that is capable of one day assuming power. And I guess that this time around, he's calculating, he's planning to take power through elections and normal peaceful politics. He also said a few things about the Turkish political system and how it is inspired by Hizbi Islami's work. So he clearly sees himself as a major political figure. He opposed a parliamentary system in Afghanistan, which is a big sticking point with Jamiat-e-Islami. So I think he's very much back to be in the power game. And let's see. And I think what he told the Taliban is that he completely rejected their fight. He called their fight an unholy war in, I think it was in the speech in Lahman. So I think he's very clear of what he wants to achieve, but he's also very clear, at least he's saying very publicly, that he wants to do it peacefully.
Interesting. Samandar, let me bring you in here. So what was the reaction by the Taliban to Hikmatyar's message towards them, like it's not a holy war, you lie down your guns? So was there any reaction by them?
There was no public reaction, but after his speeches, Taliban had several attacks in different parts of the country. Although Hikmatyar was very clear, he mentioned this attacking Kunduz two times in 2 years. He said that what kind of strategy was that? This was a very weak strategy. And if you can take over a major city, and if you are not able to keep it for a long time, so this is not a strategy. He was giving different examples for that, how Taliban is fighting this unholy war. This was not only Taliban issue he mentioned in his speech in the palace. Even he mentioned directly the two leaders, the Dr. Ghani and Dr. Abdullah, that this way of government is not proper, it's not useful, it's not solving problems. People are not happy with this system and they need to think on this. So he's very keen. This week he's having meetings with with other Hizb Islami wings, for example, Farooqi or Gandiwal in Sabaun. So I'm sure they are having some progress on that also. In Kabul, gatherings, many people were there from different provinces of Afghanistan, from Badakhshan to Faryab to Herat and from south to southeastern part. So he's fully interested in, he wants to unify the party back. His recent comment and his recent meetings with the parliamentary delegations, especially the senators, Wulusi Jerga members, this also show that he wants to play a big part. Plus, one thing which is very important, he's very critical of Russia, former Russia, current Russian government, and he had a very clear message to Russia for their new influence, for their new joint work with Taliban, which is very important for U.S. government is also and for Afghan government as well. And the other thing, this time we see that Hikmatyar is more, in his speeches, more sympathized with the Pashtun tribes, which is showing something that the lack of leadership in Pashtun tribes in Afghanistan recently after Karzai, Dr. Ghani, the government is very weak. The Pashtuns are unhappy in different parts of the country, and Taliban are more Pashtun. So this is also one reason that Hikmatyar can be a good leader for Pashtun tribes, and Pashtun can come to follow him.
Okay, Samandar, you mentioned a very interesting point here, like his potential Pashtun first politics. Is it your opinion, or he has already shown some indication that this will be his line of politics going forward?
I think his speeches in Lagman, Ningrahar, the way he started from eastern part, and I know in the past Hikmatyar Dari or Farsi speech was more stronger than his Pashto speeches. But this time he started more with the Pashto speeches and the books he wrote, written in exile, around 120 books. Most of them are Pashto. And even he started in a way research in Pashto languages. So this time, beside his interest, he's having interest or not having interest, there is a need, you know, in Afghanistan, Pashtun tribes has no popular leader in these days. Karzai is not a popular leader anymore. Dr. Ghani cannot do this. There is no other popular leader among Pashtun tribes to manage Taliban, to invite Taliban to the peace process. U.S. government also know this. Our international partners, NATO allies country, also know this, that Pashtuns are unhappy from this government in the previous government. They lost everything. They are suffering all east, south, southeast. Even in northern provinces. So this time, I think there will be a big effort for this to bring Pashtuns around him. Maybe even international community will be happy to do this with him.
Abu Bakr, your point on this?
Well, I think he said, he definitely said the right things in terms of like creating an Afghanistan where everybody has their share. I mean, in one of his speeches, he spoke at length about this, the need for one Afghan nation and fair distribution of resources and all of things. But I mean, the reality of Afghan politics is that Hizb-e-Islami has always been Pashtun Islamist or predominantly Pashtun Islamist movement, because we have to acknowledge that Hizb-e-Islami has members from all parts of the country, all ethnicities mostly, particularly among the Sunni Afghans. But we also have to remember that I think that there is some kind of resentment among Pashtuns, and Hikmatyar is trying to do many things. He wants to be the only Islamist leader of Pashtuns, because the two, the current president and the previous president Karzai, be kind of secular characters. Ghani more so than Karzai, perhaps, or Karzai, especially particularly tribal leader coming from a royal lineage, from a Durrani lineage. So I think Hikmatyar is kind of projecting this new kind of Pashtun leadership where he can be both an Islamist leader, and he has credentials to be an Islamist leader. He's a leader of one of the major Islamist parties. He's an Islamist scholar. He's written all these, a large body of Islamist works. But the key thing is that I think he is unfortunately going to be very decisive. And if he is not careful, the current goodwill he has generated will push people away from him.
Hmm. Abu Bakr, just briefly, did he say anything about Pakistan yet?
He said in one of the speeches that we should all go and talk to Pakistan and persuade it not to interfere in Afghan politics. In other words, he's trying to distance himself from Pakistan and distance himself from this accusation that he's basically a Pakistani agent.
Okay, Andrew, earlier you mentioned about your time in Peshawar, for instance. The reason I was curious about the Pakistani question here, that the rule of this country has been always controversial in Afghanistan. So now Hikmatyar returns from Pakistan. And most probably he was there leading to his return and probably conducting the negotiations from a safe house in Pakistan. So also, we know his connection to Pakistani agencies goes back to decades. How do we know that he is independent in his thinking?
Well, good question, and I don't think I have the answer for it. I think there are certainly grounds for suspicion that, he was, I don't see that he would have been freely able to come back against the wishes of Pakistan. I mean, when we've had Afghan Taliban leaders or others who have gone against the wishes of Pakistan intelligence agencies in the past, they've either been arrested or perhaps ended up dead. And so the fact that, over a period of nearly 6 years of negotiations that culminated in this agreement, you have to speculate that it has the support of Pakistan for Hikmatyar's return. So I guess what all the reasons are, I'm not in the best position to determine those, but I think it is an interesting question to ask. And certainly I think the assumption must be that Pakistan was supportive of Gulbuddin's return to Afghanistan. And so perhaps if you want to put a good light on it, it's because, to help move a peace process forward. But I would suspect that most Afghans I know don't share the assumption of good intentions in that regard.
Interesting. It took me so long to get into this point. So what does his return really means in practice to the country, to the country's current political landscape and stability and security, and what can he offer to fix any of them? Also, is there any connection between the ongoing review by the Trump administration of his Afghan policy? Does it have to do anything with the Taliban and IS's aggressive offensive? We will continue the debate discussing this and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Gandhara podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Majlis Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Central Asia from local perspective, and the podcast is published every week, most probably Saturdays, on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate today on Gandhara, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's podcast, looking into Afghanistan and Pakistan. We are discussing implications of the prominent warlord Gulbuddin Hikmatyar's return to Afghanistan. Joining me in the discussion are Michael Kugelman, Senior South Asia Fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center, Andrew Wilder, Vice President of Asia Programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, Rahimullah Samandar, head of Afghanistan's Independent Journalists Association, Abu Bakr Siddiq, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website, which looks into Pakistan in Afghanistan. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Gandhara podcast here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen, to the podcast. So in the first half of the discussion, we looked into some of the immediate reactions to Hikmatyar's return. Now, let's start this part of the debate by discussing timing of his return. So when I think of timing, I was also thinking about the two other ongoing major developments, a Trump administration's review of its Afghanistan strategy, B, Taliban's deadly offensive, though emerging of IS militants and recent tension between Pakistan and Afghanistan could also be counted on other elements in these developments. Did any of these play any role in Afghan authorities' efforts to engage him at this time around, Michael?
I don't think so. I mean, there's, as I understand it, the Trump administration's review has been ongoing for quite some time, and I don't think we need to draw any sort of links or convergences between that and what Hekmatyar is up to. But I think it is an important point to bring the U.S. angle in here. Mm. I mean, one thing that we haven't really discussed yet is what Hekmatyar has said about the United States. And, you know, it was striking in his public remarks in recent days is how he was very hostile. The language he used toward the United States was very critical. And, of course, as I understand it, at one point, Hekmatyar was refusing to agree to a deal with the Afghan government unless U.S. troops were to leave the country. And, you know, he was also talking about, in his public remarks, how he opposes the idea of an imposed government in Afghanistan, which clearly is referring to how the current unity government was formed after a negotiation process led by Secretary of State John Kerry at the time. And, you know, he even said, I think at one point, with the mind to the U.S., he said, don't test your ammunition on our oppressed people. Really strong. So, you know, those types of views would seem to put him at odds with the way that the National Unity Government thinks of the U.S., which obviously supports a continued U.S. presence in Afghanistan for the foreseeable future. And it does seem that this review of policy toward Afghanistan here in Washington will culminate in a decision to not only maintain the current military commitment in Afghanistan, but perhaps even to intensify it by sending several thousand more troops into Afghanistan. I imagine that that's not something that Hekmatyar would support, at least based on the rhetoric that's been coming out, what he's been saying about what he thinks about the U.S. presence. And, you know, you have to wonder if that could generate some type of tension point between himself and you know, top leaders in the Afghan government that really support a continued U.S. presence. So, you know, all that said, I think that, you know, Washington certainly supported Hekmatyar's return and certainly supported the deal because I think it, you know, we're all desperate for good news stories from Afghanistan. And here was a successful accord. But I think what's ironic is that bringing him back into the fray is essentially bringing back a pretty critical, a pretty large, prominent critic of U.S. policy in Afghanistan. Of course, his views could evolve, to be sure. That's what politicians do. They evolve their views. But I think that's a significant factor to point that out there, that there could be a bit of a divergence between what the U.S. intends to do policy-wise and the views that Hekmatyar has about the United States and Afghanistan.
Do you see in that way, Andrew, with the Hekmatyar's return to Afghanistan, maybe we are creating another enemy there?
I'm sure he's going to come back and be critical of the U.S. I mean, I think that's actually good politics. Karzai's played that card quite effectively at times. And also, I think it's legitimate for, you know, Afghan leaders to, you know, political figures to be critical of, you know, certain aspects of what the U.S.'s policy has been in Afghanistan in the past. And I think, you know, I'd be surprised, certainly given Hekmatyar's past, that he wouldn't take that line. But, I mean, back to your question about why the timing of why now, you know, I agree with Michael. I don't think it has anything to do with the Trump administration's review process. I also don't think it has much to do with the spring offensive. I mean, it's been a long process, and so it could be that it just reached a culmination. But if I had to speculate on the timing, I would link it actually much more to elections. If you're, you know, Hizb-i Islami and want to become relevant, and, you know, parliamentary elections are scheduled, you know, say for next year, although I'm still skeptical they can be held next year. But it's important for them to come back, get organized, try to unify as a party, and to prepare for the parliamentary elections, which is where I think I would guess that they'll do relatively well, given, you know, the tradition of having, you know, Hizb-i Islami's reputation for having strong organizational skills. That will serve them well in a parliamentary election campaign. Already, I think if you look at the various factions of Hizb-e-Islami as represented, or people with those affiliations in the parliament, they're probably the second largest party, second only to Jamiat, and the various factions of Jamiat represented in the parliament. So if they actually organize and get more unified, I would expect that they will, you know, be a powerful force in the parliamentary election campaign, and then, you know, significant vote bank and a player for the presidential election scheduled for 2019. So if I had to speculate on why now, I would probably link it a bit more to the electoral politics.
Okay. Let's bring Samandar here. Samandar, you said that Hikmatyar is already meeting with some of his supporters coming from regions in Afghanistan. Is the election on the agenda of that discussion in any way?
Election is in the agenda, but not in the top agenda. First, they are very focused on how to reorganize the party, how to manage provincial meetings, meet all former Hizb-e-Islami members, collect them all back to the Hizb-e-Islami under one leadership. This is the first agenda, and I agree with Andrew. Maybe the second, and the third one will be the election issue. They are preparing for that, and they want to have a good part in the parliament re-election, and also even they are keen for the presidential election. Also, before coming to Kabul, Hikmatyar had a comment on that for the presidential election issues. He showed his interest in the past also. They are working on other issues also, for example, how to support government, the way Hikmatyar was promising again and again that he is influential in the peace process and he can support government and he can bring some of Taliban to the table. So they are working on that as well. So
Abu Bakr, we discussed his return from Hikmatyar's point of view a lot. So what are Ghani's possible plans about Hikmatyar's future? I read an article the day or before yesterday that he could probably strengthen Ghani's position. And Samandar, I think, mentioned that once and twice, at least among Pashtun majority. So, and there was also even comment on that article that Ghani might put him on his own ballot as a vice president in the upcoming elections. So the question is, what Ghani's planning about him?
Well, I think certainly, there is a lot of speculation about Hikmatyar being this model for peace with the Taliban. I don't think he will make a big difference on that front because this year is going to be a year of war. The Taliban are going to push for capturing more territory, particularly provincial capital, and try to hold on to that major population center, which will show that they're capable of controlling urban centers. Politically, I think there is a danger, and that's a very real danger. And Hikmatyar has been very vocal about it from the day one. He doesn't recognize the National Unity Government as a nice arrangement or even, I think, as a legitimate arrangement, because he said that this is, like Samandar said, that this is like one car being driven by two drivers in the opposite directions. What he can do is, if he puts his political weight behind President Ghani, that might strengthen Ghani to the extent that he might actually go into confrontation with Abdullah or Jamiat. But again, I think there are too many variables in that scenario, because we have recently seen that one of the major Jamiat leaders, Atta Muhammad Noor, the powerful governor of northern Balkh province, has been talking to Ghani independently and is trying to get rid of Abdullah as this kind of leader of Jamiat and representing Jamiat in the National Unity Government. So I will be very cautious about kind of speculating very hard on which way Hikmatyar will go. I think, as Samandar has pointed out, he is right now trying to reestablish himself as a national leader in Afghanistan. And for that, he needs to, first of all, put together his political party and, in a sense, try to recreate the old Hizb-e-Islami. Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry, we have a lot to discuss yet, but unfortunately have to conclude the discussion here in a few sentences. Is Afghanistan better off with his return? He already made some nice promises. He also spoke almost against everyone, Taliban, against the U.S., against Russia, against the unity government. Now the question is Afghanistan better off with his return? Andrew, let's start with you.
Well, maybe I will plagiarize from Burhan Osman's working for the Afghan Analyst Network, he recounted a story I remember hearing in Peshawar of former Mujahideen leader Maulvi Khalis talking that Hikmatyar is like a pair of burning trousers. If you take them off, you're naked. If you leave them on, you burn. So it could be that there's no good situation here or win-win scenario. I mean, I think in either case, though, I do think his return is going to have a significant impact on Afghan politics. I hope in a positive direction, but given Gulbuddin's track record over the last, you know, 4 or 5 decades, I have to say I remain a little pessimistic.
Okay. Michael, briefly, please.
Yeah, I mean, on a superficial level, yes, I think he could bring good things to the country. I mean, as I said earlier, Afghanistan needs good news stories, and it certainly is great optics to see him being flanked by Abdullah and Ghani, who are rarely seen in public together and don't get along. So the optics of comedy and cooperation are certainly good, but I just think on a deeper, more substantive level that his return on the scene will simply exacerbate the divisions and the divides that unfortunately have been afflicting politics in Afghanistan for quite some time. So I wish I could be more optimistic than I am.
Let's see, maybe people in Kabul is more optimistic. We obviously like to finish our discussion with an optimistic note. Let's see if we have one. Samandar.
It's positive. I think all his speeches, all his comments are more positive. He's in a supportive manner, supportive for peace, supportive for strengthening this government in making this popular. The way he's giving different advices, different proposals. He will be influential in bringing majority of those people fighting against government in the past 1.5 decades. All of them were not Taliban. There were Hizb Islami fighters also. And they will come and they will leave their guns. This is a positive thing. And he will reorganize a big political party, which is very good for Afghanistan political system to have and compete through political party system. And the Hibi, he has influence on different parts of the country. Is a political party having all ethnics. This is helpful to the government. His presence is also supportive to the Ghani government and also overall to the government and also to the policy of international community.
Okay, Abu Bakr, the question was, is Afghanistan better off with Hikmatyar in the country?
Well, as many of my Afghan friends always remind me, we have no option but to be optimistic. I think Hikmatyar's peace deal has a great lesson, and the lesson is that despite all the problems, Afghans are still capable of agreeing on peace among themselves. I mean, his deal stood out, is outstanding in the by the fact that it was a deal that was negotiated and concluded among Afghans primarily, and nobody else can take credit for being, no other country or neighbor or superpower can do that. So I think that's a good thing. And I think that in the ceremony in the Afghan presidential palace to welcome him back, there were two things that I learned from reporting in Afghanistan. I think it was the New York Times or somebody who said that he brought his wife and his daughter to the inauguration meeting, and Hikmatyar has been very vocal about advocating women rights and education for women and all that. And the key takeaway was that the new generation of Hizb Islami members were constantly reminding the old generation of Hizb Islami members that they had committed great blunders and mistakes, and they should own their blunders and mistakes. So I think I stand optimistic.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much for insightful comments, Abu Bakr Siddiq, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. Also, big thanks to Michael Kugelman, senior South Asia fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center, Andrew Wilder, vice president of Asia programs at the U.S. Institute of Peace, and Rahimullah Samandar, head of Afghanistan's Independent Journalists Union. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us today on the Gandhara podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Gandhara podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.